Congressman Richie Neal, one of my favorite people in the whole world, from Massachusetts 1st District, my congressman, in office since 1989, and one of the great sagacious voices of the United States Congress. Welcome, sir.
That's a very nice introduction. Thanks, Alan.
Okay. You have really been so instructive on things Irish, things of the church, and I'm fascinated by watching Pope Francis's address to Congress. I wondered, it must have been very different to be in the room with him. What were people feeling?
Well, I think there was a great sense of optimism, and I always use one word to, I think, speak to the inspiration that we draw from him, and that word is welcome. And I think that that's the message that he sends, and I thought his address to the Congress was substantive and not incendiary. And I think it was a reminder that you can actually have conversations with people that can, in fact, accomplish making one's point, and at the same time not driving away people that might find themselves in disagreement with you.
Well, as the camera panned the Congress, it was interesting to me to see who was applauding what. For example, when he was talking about, you know, more equal distribution of the country's wealth, I thought that the Democrats were applauding a lot more than the Republicans were.
Well,
I
think the evidence is fairly overwhelming on that point. And it's, I mean, I think the argument, as you know, is much more complex than the notion that the rich are rich because the poor are poor and vice versa. And I think that what one might conclude is that there are a lot of reasons for it, but you can't get past the point that in the last 2 decades, there has been a greater concentration of wealth in America. I think part of it is due, obviously, to the fact that at one time, the smartest young people in America tended to go into a business that made something. And at the same time, I think during the last at least 2 decades, more and more young people have been drawn to finance. And I think that you could also say that there's a skill set problem in America. Technology allows employers to accomplish the same end with fewer employees. So if during the midst of the recession, which was the worst since the Great Depression, an employer got used to accomplishing the same end with X number of employees, you're not going to convince them to have X plus one new staffers in the hope of just because they should hire somebody. And then I also think that the other part of it is globalization has created downward pressure on wages. But not to miss the point that as we have moved more in the direction of a service economy and away from the old manufacturing sector, combined with the relative weakness of unions today in America, and understanding that 7% of the private sector is now organized, you can see that all of these occurrences have contributed to this greater disparity in wealth.
Yes, but disparity in wealth is hardly part of Republican dogma.
Well, I think that there is a grudging recognition, even on the Republican side. I think they might dispute what brought it about.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that, in fairness, they would acknowledge that the gap between the people at the very top and the people at the very bottom, or when you consider that what the difference is between CEO pay and employee pay, it's very different, and I think that those numbers have changed radically during the course of the last 2 decades and really during the last 10 years.
You're a teacher of government. I've always been interested in one aspect of what we are facing now. The polls reflect, for example, that Jeb Bush would probably be the most effective anti-Hillary candidate the Republicans could put up for office. But when you look at the way that it's developing, the primaries just don't seem to want that to happen because so few people structurally show up in the primaries, and those are always the right to the right of center. Has the primary system outlived itself?
Well, I think that what's happened with the primary system is, do you note the fact that Jack Kennedy in 1960, I think he ran in 6 primaries, and Teddy Kennedy in 1980 ran in 40. So today, between the primaries and the caucus system and the allocation of delegates, you can see that the effort is to appeal to what I always describe as the real believers. And they tend to be the ones that take a pronounced interest in the nominating process.
Is that as true as Richie, is that as true in the Democratic Party as it is in the Republican Party?
Oh, there's no question about it. And I think the example that I would cite is obviously Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton 7 years ago. In states early on, if you recall, Barack Obama did very well in Iowa, and that set his campaign toward the North Star. And at the same time, I think that he prepared for Iowa and Hillary Clinton prepared for November. And the danger was that he and his team really understood a state like Nevada, where she got more votes in the state of Nevada, but he got more delegates because the delegates were allocated on the basis of the congressional districts, or in the state of Texas that she actually won by a slender margin, or in the state of Indiana. Senator Obama at the time, he received at least parity with delegates, or in many instances, a few more, because they had focused the whole delegate selection process. So I guess the point is that I think that the two candidates for president that emerged, they generally have been those who have veered right and those who have veered left in an effort to secure the nomination. And with so few votes up for grabs when it comes to the November election, you really then try to get back to the center or near the center for the purpose of winning the election. And here we are with another October to go in a presidential election cycle, and just about all of us, we have a pretty good idea about, number one, how 90% of the voters are going to vote, and number two, where about 88 to 90% of the states are going to fall. So I think that that sense of polarization plays out in the primary process, where people who really demand kind of hard, fast answers, they tend to be the ones that show up. I don't think that Iowa and I don't think New Hampshire are real snapshots of what November looks like, but I must tell you that when the national news media gets done, after those caucus get-togethers in Iowa and the preference primary in New Hampshire, you're going to clearly have somebody who people will be anointing the front runner.
The day after the primaries, if we said it's not fair for New Hampshire to be the first, we're going to set up a national primary system, would the people in New Hampshire and other places put up with that?
No, they wouldn't. And I can tell you that that's not likely to happen. And in the caucus state of Iowa, it comes to mind because remember that you have to go out on a cold January evening, or in this case, it might be February 1st, but you have to go out on a very cold evening and you have to stay there. And you hold a card in the air with your preference, and you have this chance, unlike New Hampshire, where you can go out during the 8 hours of the day and you have a chance to cast the regular ballot that we all are used to. So Iowa really calls for people that have more than a passing interest to show up. And on the Republican side in Iowa, one of the challenges will be is that overwhelmingly it tends to be evangelical voters who disproportionately impact the vote turnout or the caucus turnout in the state of Iowa. That's the reality of it.
Richie Neal, I only have a minute left, but I wondered, is Hillary going to be the candidate?
I think she is, yes. And you know that I have already endorsed her by way of disclosure. But not to miss the point that when you look at the polling data, even as it's currently constructed, she still does very well amongst Democrats. I mean, everywhere there was a primary vote 7 years ago where it was limited to Democrats, she won. Where Democrats and independents could participate, President Obama won. And I think when you look at the numbers with Democrats, she's still clearly the front runner by a significant margin. And not to miss the point that even as her number has declined nationally, her number amongst Democrats has held fairly firm.
Richie Neal, we love having Richie Neal, so bright, so wonderful. Richie Neal, Massachusetts' first district Democrat in office since 1989 and a great educator. Thank you so much, Richie, for being with us. When we come back the next time, let's talk about Iran.
Thank you, Alan.